Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Welcome to the Chase Down Emergency Podcast on Leverage the Chat. We are changing our name because it seems like every podcast we're doing these days is an emergency podcast. I'm Justin Rowe with my co-host Carter Rodriguez, and we are here to talk about one of the most fun regular season Cavs games we have seen in a very, very long time. Carter, I can only imagine that you are buzzing right now.
And we back. I'm so geeked about this game. Like, it was so fun from start to finish and in all the ways that we wanted it to be fun. You know, like, it wasn't just like they managed to win through some Herculean LeBron effort. It was like, no, they were just like really effing good, and everyone we like it was good, and all the new people were good, and they just beat the shit out of the Celtics on the road.
I love
it. After, like, the Celtics just couldn't have been smarmier about the trade deadline.
Oh.
Like,
yeah.
It was just like, oh, like, it was simultaneously like this weird, Celtics fans had this weird, like, problematic issue where they would, one, be like, ha ha, Ainge fleeced your ass and he sold you junk and you bought it up and you gave us Kyrie. But then they'd also be like, you guys are being really mean to Isaiah.
Yeah, Isaiah's actually really, really good. And Tyronn Lue and LeBron are the reason that he was ruined. And
I mean, there's
a bit
of
a contradiction there.
Yeah, those two takes are so outrageously opposed. They ruined Paul Pierce's night, and screw Paul Pierce. Every shot of like KG and Rondo and Doc just sitting on the sideline, just gritting their teeth.
Yeah.
Was just put mainline that shit.
I love Doc's quote of, oh yeah, I'm sitting, I'm going to be there, I'm going to boo the referees and boo LeBron. And normally that's reserved for Boston media members, but nice to see Doc join in the fun. It is fun beating those guys because 2008 is still one of those years that stings a lot. But yeah, it was so much fun. Like, I understand Jordan Clarkson is a bit of a feast or famine player, and that's one thing that we're going to need to get used to. And he was eating.
We're feasting, baby.
And I love LeBron after the game, who had absolutely no voice, sounding like Doc Rivers. And he's like, yeah, I was yelling out defensive assignments the whole time. I am calling bullshit on LeBron. I think he lost his voice cheering. Because he was losing his damn mind. There was that one great shot of him, Kevin Love, and a couple other guys. I think Jetty was on the bench after Clarkson hit another three. And he's pointing at the arm. Clarkson was stunting after each shot. Like, you could tell. It probably helps that he was a former Laker, so you still got that Celtics rivalry going. Because those
dudes
100%.
They were
loving
very interested.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, they were having a blast, too, in a way that's like, you normally expect them just to be, like, very head down, very, like, reserved. Like, hey, I'm just going to do my job. Like, not make too much of a scene because, you know, like, I know I'm new here. Nope, Clarkson specifically was stunting so hard after that transition three. Which I, like, when he rose for it, I was like, all right. And then it dropped and it was like, damn. Like, it was, like, everything you really wanted to see happen. Happened at a very high level.
Man, they got some bucket getters. Like, Rodney Hood, every single shot that guy takes looks like it's in. Like, it is a gorgeous-looking jumper. I mean, he's taking about 7 threes a game in a reserve role and hitting 39% of them on the year. Like, that is something that the Cavs desperately need. And we also got probably one of the funniest tweets I have ever seen, that Rodney Hood looks like BoJack Horseman. And like now that...
So cruel.
Well, he's so lanky. He's got a big-ass head. I'm all in on the Rodney Hood experience. Like, each of those guys brought something to the table, and it is comical how different the defensive effort is from this team. Like, forget this game. Even against the Atlanta Hawks, where there was like 7 guys playing, the communication, the effort, it's just night and day. And now all of a sudden you have all of this length. Like George Hill, which George Hill, everyone was panicking about his D rating and stuff like that this year. That guy's been a good defender his entire career, including last year in Utah when he was hurt. It turns out healthy George Hill in a situation that isn't Sacramento is a pretty good defender. Like, I was pretty impressed with, one, what he did on Kyrie, and then switching on to Tatum and Morris on different possessions, forcing steals. Like, this team just has so much length and athleticism, and it's so nice to see guys that aren't 45 years old playing.
Yeah, I think that when we talked about this trade, and you and Dave DeFore did a great job kind of recapping the deadline, but I think when we were discussing all this, it was the Cavs got younger, added three 25-year-olds, and they got bigger. And you look at this starting lineup, Hill, 6'3", with like a 6'10 wingspan. God, his arms are so long. J.R. Smith, 6'6", Jetty Osmond, 6'8", LeBron, 6'8", Thompson, 6'8", and then you go to your bench, Nance, 6'9", Jeff Green, 6'9", Jordan Clarkson, 6'5", Rodney Hood, 6'8", Kyle Korver, 6'7". That's an enormous team.
Yep.
And, you know, it's funny, like, I do think there has been kind of a move away from these mega-sized centers for the most part, unless they're freak athletes. But size on the wing and at the guard positions is really where teams really can kill you. And that's something that the Warriors have done really well in the last couple years, yep. Is all their perimeter players are just enormous. Even Steph is 6'3". So I think that you really felt that extra length. You felt that in the deflections that they were able to force on defense. George Hill's the first good point guard, or the first good defensive point guard LeBron James has played with in Cleveland since Eric Snow.
Hey, man, remember when we were trying to push the Booby Gibson is a lockdown defender narrative? That was a thing, and you cannot deny that that was a thing. I remember Byron,
it was absolutely a thing.
Byron Scott was trying to push that even after the departure.
Yeah, it was just anything desperate to try to find someone who could dribble and play defense. And
you're going to get some deli shade. Do we have any Australian listeners? Because they're going to come after you.
Yeah, I guess it's not that Deli wasn't a good defender. It's that, I mean, Hill's definitely better. I will say that. Because Deli was a very good and helpful team defender.
Deli was a really good off-ball defender. Hill, like, as you said, he has tremendous length. And I really would love to see what this team looks like fully healthy. Like, when they're starting Hill, Hood, LeBron, Love, and Thompson, like, everybody, like Hill, as you said, is super long, and then everyone else is either 6'8", 6'9", and up. Like, that is just a ton of length. And Rodney Hood doesn't move his feet tremendously well. I saw him kind of get hung up on screens a couple times against Boston, but which is different than just simply dying on screens and not even trying to fight through, which so many of the past players that we've had on the wing just do consistently. But I mean, Hood, like, even that length, that's going to make such a big difference in comparison to where they were, that I'm impressed. Like, this has worked out better than I thought it would earlier, and I'm sure there's going to be bumps along the way. I think a team that plays a little bit more disciplined defense against the Cavs could kind of force them to play a bit more of a half-court game, and that's when you're going to see more of the unfamiliarity. But overall, like, the infusion of talent and athleticism on this team, it's just night and day.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I did want to stick on the defense and specifically talk about George Hill's defense.
I'm all
something
about it.
Something that was really fun to see that really we haven't seen in a long time. And this is one of the Dunked On Basketball guys. They loved talking about how whenever Kyrie would have to hit a screen, it was just a natural, you had to switch it because he died on the screen so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And something I really appreciated was, I mean, Hill definitely got clipped a couple times. He definitely got hit hard, and you know, Kyrie or whoever he was guarding, whether it was Rozier or Kyrie, was able to get a little runway. His ability to fight through that screen and then reestablish connection with the ball handler was something that we really haven't seen a Cavs perimeter defender do in a long time. Normally, it's just you know, that screen happens and the whole scramble mode kind of has to get set. to in this game, I noticed that a lot of actions where Hill was being screened, those stayed two-man games.
Yep.
Because he maintained connection. And, you know, we didn't see Boston get up a ton of easy threes. They put up a lot, but there weren't that many that were wide open. And I thought it was really interesting the way he was able to connect. I still think the scheme's a bit of a problem in terms of the blitzing. I still think it adds a lot of responsibility that maybe doesn't need to be there. But when they did play drop coverage in that pick and roll, I think Hill did a phenomenal job maintaining connection. And when he lost it, he didn't lose it for long. And that's kind of where those long arms come into play. Like, you can't just pull up for like a quick floater when someone with a 6'9 wingspan is 2 feet behind you chasing you.
Yeah. Like, Kyrie still had an efficient game, but he hit a lot of tough contested shots, which, I mean, it's Kyrie, that's what he does. But they really did a good job limiting him. Like, he was just not able to get into a consistent rhythm, and they reduced the volume of shots that he got. And just the switchability of this team is, it's something I haven't seen before. And I found myself kind of watching Boston play on the offensive side of the floor, and Boston's by no stretch of the imagination a good offensive team, but like, there were so many possessions where I was trying to imagine what that would have looked like with Isaiah there, or whoever else the Cavs had a point guard over the
Jose,
a few months. Yeah,
you know, like,
yeah, like,
it's not all Isaiah hating, even though that's a big part of what we
no,
do here.
Whether it be Isaiah, Derrick Rose, Wade, like, it's a totally different ball game, and the identity of this team is so different. And to me, it's really interesting, and I'm going to be Freddy foreshadowing here. One of the things I'm working on right now for the Sword is just kind of how this team kept its core together but changed the identity around it. Like, even though it wasn't probably 100% intentional to keep J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love, the fact that you have those guys going together and it's not just another year of mercenaries for hire and we're flipping guys, it's just such an interesting dynamic, because you had Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder who were not happy coming over to Cleveland. They had an established idea of who they are as players. And now the core, those four guys, they're still there. They know what their roles are. And everybody else is coming to a winning situation for the first time. They're trying to establish themselves. They're trying to find out who they are as players. Larry Nance, God, he might be the most athletic player that the Cavs have ever had outside of LeBron James. Rodney Hood, his first chance in a real winning situation. Jordan Clarkson, and George Hill, the one guy that kind of is established, but his role throughout his entire NBA career has been someone that manages the game, just a really smart veteran, and he's really developed himself into one hell of a shooter. So these pieces just make so much sense for this roster, and it's really a remarkable job by the Cavs front office putting this together.
Yeah, I agree, and I do think there's going to be some natural and maybe some to some degree deserved pushback on, listen, like, we shouldn't be victory lapping just yet, and we probably shouldn't. I mean, we all remember how fun that first Isaiah game was, but they will also rightfully note that, listen, the Celtics aren't playing particularly well right now, and especially their offense is really struggling as of late. And my counter to that would be, well, have you seen the Cavs against other terrible offenses this year?
Right.
Because it doesn't really matter who they've played. The other team has shot around 48 to 52%.
And they were getting open looks. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah, 40 to 43% from three. And then they got to the line. Like, every facet of their defense against every team, like, Orlando dropped like 120 every time they played the Cavs. It's not a matter of bad Celtics here. They played much better defense than they have as of late. I did want to talk a little bit about our boy, Jetty Osman.
Yes. I've been trying to tell people for so long that, like, I tried to be a measured fan. Like, I tried to keep expectations low with Jetty, and let people know that, hey, this is a good guy, but You know, manage your expectations. He's probably going to be like a 5-6-time All-Star, like, but he exceeded all of those expectations. I think we got to be looking at Hall of Fame now.
I think as a Mass Live writer once wrote, while there's no guarantee that he's ever an MVP, he's certainly a lock for the Hall of Fame.
Shout out to Jetty Osmond for outplaying Jason Tatum. And both of them miss an open dunk today, I might add.
You know, it was funny with the missed dunk specifically, because one, I think everyone knew he was going to miss that dunk or come close, because his footwork and handle were like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yep. National TV on a breakaway. And it wasn't like he came up short and got stuffed by the rim.
He overshot.
Yeah, he dunked on the backside of the rim. It was
amazing. I'm not sure he ever had control of the basketball.
No.
He was so overly hyped. And but I was thinking about that missed dunk and how in a different circumstance – that is so fucking depressing. Like, if this team wasn't playing well.
Oh, yeah.
If they were getting run off the floor and he did that dunk, or if they hadn't made trades at the deadline and he missed that dunk, like, that would suddenly become, like, the summation of, like, everything that's gone wrong with this season. But instead,
it made him more likable.
Yeah, instead, everyone's like, whoa, this kid, he'll figure it out.
And especially because he followed up, like, the next possession, he came flying in from the perimeter to get, like, a contested offensive rebound. Like,
drew a foul.
Dude just knows how to play basketball. Like, he's a high IQ basketball player. He's not going to try to do too much. And I was just sitting there watching, and, like, between, like, kind of, like, the four young guys that they have in Osmond, Clarkson, Nance, and Hood, you're looking at those four guys filling in, and you compare that to what the Cavs have had in the past, whether it be Amon Shumpert, Jordan McRae, or Jay Crowder, whoever else they had filling in those roles, and it's just such an upgrade, not only in talent, but, like, potential. Like, there's actually a ceiling beyond, like, none of these guys are on the back nine of their career, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And Jetty's a really interesting case in the sense that he's this very strange combination of we don't see this very often, is great feel for the game, still developing skill set. Like, normally it's like either like he's got like the tools, he can dunk, he can shoot, but he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. Like, especially, like, great example would be like early Zach LaVine, but like, this is like, you know, like, you just watch him and think, man, when this kid learns to dribble, he's going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He's just been such a revelation, and his energy on defense, he does have a little bit, and like, I know certain people don't like him, but he does have like a weird Anderson Varejão quality.
Oh, 100%.
He just looks a little out of control, even while he's in control.
Yeah. No, that is 100% a thing. Like, he's gotten a couple offensive fouls in the last two games too, where it's that kind of thing where he's just kind of a whirling dervish throwing elbows as he's driving.
Yeah, I forget who made the he's like a baby deer when he's running. like that's really like the vibe he gets, but he's such a good athlete, and defensively we really haven't seen a good closeout on a three since Dellavedova was on the team, and he's flying at guys. that matters.
I think we matched our season total of closeouts in this one game.
I agree with that. I remember I think it was us that was joking that, like, this team just really needs some tryhards.
Yeah. We thought Jay Crowder was going to be a tryhard.
Yeah, we thought Crowder was going to be that tryhard, but he wasn't. I think it was Jared Dubin who tweeted today that, like, Osman is giving them everything that they were wanting to get from Crowder.
Yeah, no, that was Mike Prada.
Mike Prada was – it's Prada, actually.
Prada.
Fun fact.
Okay.
Devil Wears Prada. Which I was very surprised by.
There you go.
But I really think there's something to that, and if he's going to keep hitting his threes, I do wonder – I don't know if they're going to want to take him out of the starting lineup anytime soon. And he might earn his way there just based on playing well and kind of the energy he gives.
I see where you're going. Also, I see where you're going. You're wondering if he makes LeBron expendable.
He does. That wasn't even something I needed to set up. If not for that no trade clause, he'd already be gone. Actually, I don't want to even say that because that might be true. It was pretty dark a week ago.
yeah, we can go back. We can pull audio of how fucking broken you sound.
Yeah.
I part of me even wanted to like go through and read each of your messages throughout the trade deadline. Because
they were not happy.
There were dark moments in that deadline.
Not thrilled.
You weren't on the reaction pod. Do you want to kind of add anything? Or do you just want to kind of focus on play moving forward? Any thoughts on the deadline?
I think the only gripe I really have is that I'm still not sure about Clarkson, despite his really good play today. And I'm not quite sure about giving up that. I'm still not comfortable giving up that first round pick. But, you know, if that's the only place you really had to send Isaiah, then I guess that's what you had to do. But, you know, ultimately, I think those guys are going to fit. I thought Nance was really interesting. And I don't know about you, but I felt like you could really feel the difference in his vertical gravity as compared to Tristan Thompson's.
Yeah.
Like, Thompson's a good lob catcher. Don't get me wrong. He's been a good pick-and-roll player historically, but he has lost a little bit of that bounce.
Yep.
You have to tag Nance on the roll with a third player.
People are terrified of him. And he's such a good offensive rebounder, too. And that was one thing. I didn't really realize how good Nance is. And, like, that was kind of, like, I thought he was a bit of a throw-in in the trade. Someone that's athletic, has potential. But, like, just listening to the reactions of everybody. Like, Zach Lowe was raving about him. David Thorpe was singing his praises on the TBF podcast. Kevin O'Connor was singing his praises. And I'm like, okay, like, Kevin O'Connor, like, when you got guys that historically either like other teams that are competitors to the Cavs or have been critical of how they've done things in the past, he seems to be just a coach's dream. Like, any video breakdowns you look up from him, like, he's just someone that does all these little things. And even tonight, like, there was instances where he almost volleyed the defensive rebound and, like, immediately got it to a ball handler. And, like, pushing guys to clear driving lanes. That, like, he just has so much savvy and does so many little things. And that dunk that he had, well, I guess he had two dunks, but the one from the perimeter, like, it was just... That might be the most athletic play a non-LeBron player
has done. He just floated up there.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
He took off from so far, and I was like, okay, well, this is apparently a thing now. Like, it's just such a different dynamic, and I'm going to be really interested to see how he grows alongside LeBron.
Yeah, I do think there is a degree of, I think the reputation as a dunker. You know, we talk about guys with reputations as shooters and how that affects their gravity. Even if it's not really like happening, like someone like Nico Mirotic, who's never shot a great percentage, but historically has really good gravity. I think the fear of getting absolutely wrecked by a Nance alley-oop has inherent value. And you really felt them commit defenders to him. And sure, Clarkson's not going to hit those two threes every time when you run that pick and roll with LeBron and Nance. Like,
no,
it's not always going to be there. And sometimes he's going to be icy, but a real benefit that we haven't seen yet is Lou's going to be able to toy around with lineups. Like, how crazy does that look if you have the starters out there with Nance instead of Thompson? Like, that's a really hard pick and roll to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And one that I think defenses are going to be very loath to let him yam on them. And it's going to open up wide open shots. So spread pick and roll in Cleveland looks really, really good right now. And yeah, he looked great. Another thing I want to talk about. Sorry, I keep hopping from topic to topic here.
No, I'm all about it. Like, we have been deprived of positive energy for a little while, and I think it's okay if we fan out just for a little bit. Let's just couch everything with saying this team's probably not beating the Warriors this year. I don't think that that's a realistic possibility, but this just improves their likelihood of getting there. And it improves the future of this team and kind of what their ceiling can be to contend in further years. But with all that being said, I'm so ecstatic with this team right now. Continue, Carter.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a fun game. Someone I wanted to talk about it a more, and I've kind of talked to you about this in the DMs and whatnot, Rodney Hood, who had a really nice game as well. He put up 15 points, 3 of 6 from 3, 6 of 11 from the field, got a steal, 3 rebounds. Nothing too crazy, but, you know, something that really caught my eye when I was, you know, doing my homework after the trade and reading up on, you know, all the analysis. Because, you know, I mean, there is a degree of, like, I'd like to think we both know the league pretty well, but unless you're really watching Utah Jazz every night, like, you're just not going to know the whole, the totality of a person. And Zach Lowe had a little note in his story about the perception that Rodney Hood is soft around the league.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if you beat him up going around screens, inevitably he's just going to stop fighting because he doesn't like the contact. And, you know, I'm not going to, to me, it doesn't actually matter that much if that's true. Because my first instinct was to be like, oh no, that's a problem. But you really think about it, and I think that Hood's role for this team is going to be really similar to JR's. And JR, they don't use JR Smith like they use Kyle Korver.
No.
They don't have JR run ducking through 30 screens to get open. It's really, he fills a spot on the weak side and just slides along the perimeter as help defense crashes down. They don't really design a lot for JR. And I think Hood's really going to slot in a very similar way for them. And as a result, I'm not really that worried about it. If they were going to use him like Korver, yeah, that's a concern. And he definitely disappeared from some games. But I really don't think that's going to be as big of an issue. And then you look at what he can do off the bounce, and it's really impressive. I think he can attack a closeout. He can hit a mid-ranger. And he actually went to the cup a couple times. I did see him kind of dodging some contact here and there. But ultimately, I think his role on this team, he's inherently insulated a little bit against that soft tag.
Yeah. That
he couldn't avoid that in Utah because he was playing with Rubio, Favors, and Gobert. Like,
tons of spacing. Stick to him. Tons and tons of floor spacing.
Guys were going to stick on him unless he ran off screens to get open.
Mm-hmm. No,
you couldn't use him the way the Cavs are going to use him in Utah.
No, that was one thing that I noticed. Like, I went back and I kind of watched some of his last couple games in Utah, and the degree of difficulty and how hard he had to work for shots was just remarkable. And that's not going to be here in Cleveland. Like, he's going to have such an easier time, and he's actually a capable pick-and-roll ball handler, and I'm going to be interested to see if they get him to create some secondary offense in times, whether that be with the secondary unit or with the starters, if he does eventually get moved into that role. I think some of the soft label, too, is just he's so long for his position that sometimes what he does looks awkward, and it's really smooth, but there's just so many moving parts because of his length that I can see where that perception kind of comes from.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something there. I just think that even if he is soft, it's not a huge issue within the context of this team.
And relative to who he's replacing.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it, too. I mean, this team just is so much bigger all of a sudden. Did you have any takeaways, like, strategically about, like, lineup usage or optimization from this game? Like, what lineups you think need to be seen? Because I have one if you want me to go on it.
Yeah, I'm not at that point yet. I think that this, it's hard to really get a read on this. I think you kind of develop those opinions more when you see a tight game and you see what's working and what's not working and what aspects are awkward. Like, there was a stretch there when LeBron was out that it just, the offense was bogging down, and I think George Hill hit a couple tough shots, and Jeff Green actually kind of got them through that stretch. I don't really have a lot of lineup takes right now.
I think the only one that I've really solidified on is, I think Clarkson, for his optimization, they really need to split him up from LeBron. I think lineups while LeBron is sitting really need to feature Clarkson, because I think he's got a lot of juice as a pick and roll ball handler, And I'm a little concerned that he's going to defer to LeBron too much when they share the floor, where I just don't want to see him become a misplaced spot-up shooter.
Yep.
I think that's something that I'm really anxious about. And I know that we've seen that he has some ability to create out of the pick and roll as a passer. Even if his scoring isn't super efficient, he's a good passer and good creator. And I think he can really help anchor some of the second units, especially given the fact that George Hill's default setting is not bombs away.
No, he's a game manager in the best of ways. Like that's what he's does really
in a,
well.
In a very and I think that's a good thing. And I was saying to someone else that I do think I'm going to plead with him internally just to like be a little more ready to fire. Like there were a couple open threes where it's like, dude, you got to go.
Yeah.
Fire.
You're a 45% 3-point shooter.
Yeah, if you're open, you're shooting it, pal. And LeBron wants you to. So I do think that having kind of a letting Clarkson breathe in those second units with LeBron on the bench, and obviously he's going to have to play with LeBron a little bit because, you know, LeBron only sits 11, 12 minutes a game. But I do think that that's probably the way I would optimize Clarkson. I am very interested to see how this Nance Tristan Thompson minutes dance goes on, because Tristan earned his way today. He defended amazingly well. But I do think there's going to be some matchups where Nance deserves a little more run.
Yeah, I think it's great that Tristan is looking better. And I think the pressure of whether or not they're going to get traded, having that relief for both Thompson and JR is going to do them a huge favor. I think you're going to see them play a little bit better down the stretch. And this team's going to start to develop a bit of an identity, because that's something that they've been lacking. I will say I do see where Nance, if he continues to develop, where he could really take a lot of those minutes. And if he does that with Tristan playing better, then I'm all for it. Like if he genuinely like develops into the player he can be, because he's just a freak. Like he's a smart player. He's so athletic. He's so dynamic. If he develops into that, I am all for it, because I see the upside there. It's just going to be really, really interesting to see how those two push one another moving forward. And before you chime in, I do think you're right on Clarkson. He's kind of a hybrid of everything they wanted every backup to be throughout this year. Like he's kind of giving them what they hoped Derrick Rose would give them, along with Dwayne Wade, except he can actually shoot he's a streaky shooter, but like that's all the Cavs have really had, like outside of J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver. Like it's always been streaky shooters, and I think I trust Clarkson to create shots for himself more than I trust Iman Shumpert or anybody else that has kind of been in those roles.
Yeah, I think that you're really spot on there. And I think that one of the reasons I was so cold on this trade right away is that the roster didn't make sense around Clarkson. And there is still like a little bit of a dearth of shooting on that second unit when Lou decides to platoon. When he goes Clarkson, Green, and Nance on the floor at the same time, I think that's a little tough, and I do think that they, in general, are going to have a hard time with spacing in any non-LeBron lineups at the four, mm-hmm. because Green's your other power forward. He's just not that good of a shooter, and neither are Nance or Thompson.
Yeah.
I think it will be a little squeezed at times, but having Hood, being able to optimize it where you have Hood, you have JR, you have Korver, you have a lot of guys who can shoot on the team all of a sudden, and guys who are willing to shoot. And I think that really helps me ease my concerns about Clarkson's jumper coming and going, because he won't be driving into a crowd of five people.
Right. Oh, absolutely. That's going to make a big difference. And I wonder, like, I'm almost in favor of, like, assuming Hood is starting at some point, I'm in favor of subbing LeBron out and putting Clarkson in to replace him at times. Like, I'd be interested to see what that starting lineup looks with Clarkson in there for LeBron, and then have LeBron run that second unit. Because I'd really be interested to see what LeBron, with Nance at the five and shooters, can do. Because I feel like that lineup can really get out and run.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's an interesting idea, and he has a lot of options right now. I do wonder if Jeff Green is eventually going to be the odd man out here. And the reason he won't be is that he's a guy who's like-sized to Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
But when you look at Nance, I think is going to be higher than him in the rotation. And honestly, I think Mort was saying that he thinks Korver is going to be the odd man out down the line, and that might be true, despite how great Korver's been all year. But one thing that I do think this trade accomplished, have accomplished is no one left on the roster really has the name to raise a stink if things aren't going exactly the way they want.
Yeah, true.
there were a lot of guys that had to be played. And like not in a way that I think like Tyronn Lue's an idiot for playing them. It's more like they're on the roster. If you don't play them, it's going to be a fucking problem.
Yep.
And you can't just bench Wade. You can't just bench Rose without him being a problem, even though I think we all would have liked him to. Whereas, you know, I'm sorry, if Kyle Korver only gets like 8 minutes in a game, then, you know, he's not going to burn the house down.
Yeah.
He's not a former MVP or an MVP quality player. And I actually wasn't doing a bit there. I actually mean, like, Rose has the pride of someone who's won MVP.
No, that's like, that's true. That's true.
Even though it is a funny bit, so I'm gonna retcon it and say that I was being hilarious. yeah, I thought it was really interesting, and I'm a little cooler on benching JR than you are. I think that in terms of the lineup. The rotations and how we want to see it organized over time. I think we can agree that Hood should probably get more minutes than JR overall.
Yeah.
But JR really, really benefits from playing next to LeBron James.
Yeah.
And
that might be one of the few egos you still have to manage. And yes, if that is the case, then I get that.
I'm a little nervous about losing him. Yeah, Hood can do the bench, and I think right now the lineups make a lot of sense with Hood on the bench, and you keep JR happy. And I mean, Mort has kind of been like banging this drum that like Smith's kind of nosedive in productivity in a lot of ways just goes back to he was playing with like 6 chuckers and he never got to shoot anymore.
Yep.
And
they should never create an open shot for JR because apparently, like, these real bullshit, like, falling out of bounds shots.
That, his second,
it's retarded.
The second shot of the game was oh my God. And it was so funny because as he caught it at a dead sprint, I was like, he's shooting this fucking ball.
Yeah. And I was watching the game with my brother, and the one he hit in the second half where he caught the ball, like, it was a bad pass kind of outside, and he was, like, fumbling with the dribble. I'm like, he's making a bad shot. And sure enough, like, he kind of turned around, went down the baseline, faded over 2 guys, and nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just like watching him play when he's fully engaged. I thought he had his best defensive game of the year today. Really did a nice job whenever he got matched up with Jaylen Brown or Tatum or even Morris on a couple switches. I thought he played a great defensive game, and we don't really see a lot of those. And I'm wondering how much of like the Cavaliers' total defensive collapse this season was just based on kind of a general like, oh, fuck it, we're not going to stop him anyway.
Yeah.
Vibe. Like, because LeBron was getting blown by on every possession. Even Chetty would get, or Jetty would get blown by on every possession. I'm really trying to cure myself of my Chetty
verbal mistakes. I flip flop between the two all the time.
And there was just this general sense of like, I'm not letting this guy get past me because we're playing good defense right now. And I do think that that's the kind of intangible thing people forget.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to talk to you about something else. And This is more big picture, but I was listening to the Open Floor podcast with Ben Golliver and Andrew Sharp. Wonderful pod.
Noni,
if you ever
down.
Get a chance. Huh?
My dog was barking. I don't know why.
Oh.
That's like the first time she's barked in a month. Continue.
Well, shut her the hell up.
She heard Golliver.
Yeah. I'm opining right now. But anyway, in that pod, I think it was Golliver that was saying that like some of his analytics friends kind of weren't as convinced about this trade making the Cavs much better, mostly because they sold really low on Isaiah and Jay Crowder, and that, you know, like Nance and Clarkson and Hood and Hill like don't top out as high as those guys would have if, you know, like, it, I mean, there's no way around it. The Cavs did sell low here, but I think that does ignore the fundamental reality of, one, there was no time, and two, there's no guarantee these guys are ever going to be the same again.
Yep.
Especially the most important person of the two, in Isaiah. Like, you know, his margin for error was never that high, and losing that might have been enough to ruin him. And when you consider what these guys do is they do have upside. And man, can you imagine if this team gets a top three pick?
Oh, yeah, I mean, whether it be... See, the interesting thing is, like, if the Cavs do draft, like, let's say it's Trae Young. Like, point guards and guards can transition a little easier to the NBA game and can make an impact earlier on. And they have the ability to kind of bring a young player along in a role that isn't asking them to do too much, which is great. But you may also just flip it on draft night. And that was one thing that I'm thrilled that they didn't sell low on that Brooklyn pick, because there just wasn't a name out there that was worth moving it for. And one thing that has me excited as well, like, I get the selling low on Isaiah. It's not too compelling of an argument for me because, like, even back in September, before we had seen him...
Yeah, you've been ready to sell on Isaiah.
Yeah, like, I wrote that the Cavs should trade Shump, Hill, and... Or, sorry, Shump and Isaiah along with the first-round pick for George Hill. So the return that they did get is better than that, in my opinion. So I'm on board with this move, and that was before... I saw him actually play alongside them and be disappointed because I just didn't think that he's a player that could play alongside another high usage all-star in terms of being an offensive player. Like, Al Horford's a great player, but he doesn't use that many possessions. He's not looking for his own shot, and I just don't think he's as good of a player as Kevin Love, forget LeBron James. So it's to me, it's exciting that you have these guys that are willing to be role players that fit the system. And we get to keep maximizing Kevin Love. Like, he's been really goddamn good this year. And obviously there's going to be a bit of a transition when he comes back from this injury. But, my God, like, keeping him maximized is only going to help this team moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. He's really going to still get to get his opportunities with this team. And we talked about how he was having the best year as a Cavalier this year before Isaiah came and ate all of his possessions up.
Yeah. And the other nice thing is it's not like he's somebody that's going to dominate the ball on the perimeter and change how the game flows. You can slot him in fairly easy, and it's like, okay, Clarkson, Hood, whoever it is, if Love is open, you can just throw him the ball, and he's probably hitting that shot, or if he's in the post or he's cutting, just find him. Like, he's a smart player, and he does things that make the game easier for everyone else. So I think the transition is going to be getting him into game shape, and there's going to be a bit of a transition as they learn where he likes the ball and where he's going to be on the floor. But it's not as dynamic of a shift as trying to introduce Isaiah Thomas to the lineup or another ball-dominant player.
Yeah, this is something I noticed, and it's a little bit off topic, but you talked about adjusting to, like, learning to playing with each other. It is so funny the little things you notice when you pay really close attention to a basketball team and then someone new comes around. Like when George Hill and Tristan Thompson were running some side pick and roll,
mm-hmm.
and Hill would kind of have a lane, but he'd kick it out to LeBron as if LeBron was like a knockdown shooter.
Yeah.
You know, did you notice that in the first quarter? He did it on, like, three straight possessions. The offense sort of just stalled out. And not in, like, it wasn't, like, a toxic, shitty play, but it was just like, oh, yeah, you don't really know how to play with these guys yet. You don't know, like, who's doing what and where. You just saw an open guy, so you threw it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it was just a funny thing to notice is like, man, when they figure each other out, they're going to be a lot better. And I think the Hill James duo, the Hill James love trio, actually, more specifically, is something that I think we should be really excited about. This is the kind of point guard that we kind of have wanted for Love, that pairs perfectly with Love ever since Love's been in the NBA. He's never had a point guard like George Hill.
Yep.
Even in Minnesota, we wanted them to land a point guard kind of like him to play with Love, you know?
And he's the perfect point guard to play alongside LeBron James. Like, Kyrie was more dynamic, and the team needed Kyrie because they just didn't have a lot of other options. And what LeBron and Kyrie were able to do in isolation was, like, they were both just so fantastic. But when you're talking about if you're building a team, a point guard that fits perfectly with LeBron and that there's, like, almost no overlap in responsibilities, like, man, George Hill is that perfect combo guard alongside him.
Yeah, as long as he stays healthy and doesn't get old really, really fast, I think we're going to have a good experience with him.
Mm-hmm. LeBron's going to take him on his trips to Miami.
Yeah, we got to get that guy just chock full of HGH.
I like Stan Van trading for Jameer Nelson. He's going to give him some of that super soldier serum again.
They're going to ruin us if they can even make the playoffs. Which they're probably not going to.
No, come on. They're already in a playoff spot. They're doing good.
No, they're not.
Aren't they?
No, they're the 9th seed. They're a game under 500 right now.
I'm going to argue with you here. No, you're right.
What do you mean? Dude, I check the standings to stare at the Brooklyn pick every fucking second of every day. I could tell you. I can tell you everything, pal.
Yeah, they did lose 2 games. That's right. Okay. Well, they were above 500. They just lost 2 games. That's okay. They're going to get the 7th seed, and there would make me nothing would make me happier than Boston going up against and their lack of rebounding going up against Blake and Drummond.
Are you excited for the Cavs to play the 6 or the 7 seed? Because the 7 seed's going to beat the Boston or beat the Celtics, and then the 8 seed's going to beat the Raptors, and the Cavs are still just going to cakewalk through.
Easy on the Raptors slander. Easy on the Raptors slander, buddy.
I'm just saying the Raptors don't want to fucking play the 76ers in the playoffs.
I'm not all in on the Sixers. I think they're the obvious fit to fall out of the playoffs, but no, they probably don't want to deal with that.
They don't want to do that.
No, you're right. You're
right. I would be so annoyed if I had worked all season for the number one seed in the East, and my reward was Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid in the first fucking round. Yeah. That's unfair.
Those are the type of players that they really struggle against. So you definitely have a point there.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. So yeah. But I mean, I'm mostly joking. They'll probably all advance. It is interesting to see Toronto in that one seed. Like, they really, really need that. They really need to avoid the Cavs, because I think they can beat everyone else with relative ease.
Yeah, I agree. And it's
despite the joke I just made about them not wanting to play.
Yeah.
The Sixers.
Yeah, it's I definitely agree with that. The other great thing about this trade is now I have way less fear about the Cavs falling down the standings without Kevin Love being there. Like, I think there's going to be an adjustment period, but overall, this team is way more equipped to deal with the tough schedule that the team has. And this early All-Star break, too, is going to do them a lot of favors because they have a lot of time off to kind of figure things out and get used to being around one another.
Yeah, after their game Tuesday against the Thunder, they do not play for another 9 days. February 22nd will be their next game against the Wizards.
I'm going to miss Cavs basketball, man.
Yeah, me too, man.
And I didn't think I would be saying that. You're right.
I was begging for the All-Star break. If we're looking for something to be concerned about, just for the sake of, because I don't know if, you know, there is a degree, like, there's a chance they're not fixed and there's going to be teams that figure some stuff out against them. Are you a little concerned about the lack of a second high-volume star?
To some extent, yes.
LeBron had 10 assists. The rest of the team had 12.
Yeah, like George Hill is going to need to kind of step up as the playmaker, especially with Kevin Love out, because they just don't have a secondary offensive hub. And
yep.
when this team's going to try to navigate through those lulls where they're awkward, they're standing around, they're trying to figure out where what everybody's going to do, it's on LeBron and Hill to get these guys involved. So I think that's where you want Hill to be a little more assertive. It definitely is a concern. I'm less concerned about it when Kevin Love gets back. But it's going to be really, really interesting to see how kind of those dynamics kind of form within this team. Like, I think Hood has the potential to maybe step up, because he's averaging, like, what, around 18 points per
17.
Game? 17. Yeah, 17, 18 points per game there. Like, that's pretty good volume there, and I think that the Cavs added a lot of players that can be about, like, 13 to 15 point per game scores. So they're just going to need to kind of do it by committee for the time being.
And I'm fine with that. I just is something I noticed is, and I think a lot of it was because they don't know any plays. So it's kind of unfair. But LeBron really was, every second LeBron was on the floor, it was LeBron pick and roll, LeBron pick and roll, LeBron pick and roll. And I'm a little worried.
They were not running enough pick and roll before, though. So I am happy to see that.
Yeah. I guess if I'm a little worried about anything, and this is like, it's not even a worry, it's more just like trying to think of it thoroughly. I'm a little worried that, like, what if this is just like going back to a supercharged version of the pre-decision Cavs, where it's LeBron and a bunch of role players, and that does look really, really good, but it's much more vulnerable.
Yeah.
Kevin Love, but is I think important. Love insulates against that in a major way if they use him right.
And the other thing that insulates against that moving forward is the Brooklyn pick. You hope that you add a dynamic player, whether it be through the draft or through trades. So that is something that the team needs to address moving forward. But like, they just completely changed what we view as the core. Like, there's a lot of pieces that you can see sticking with this team moving forward, or being put in a position where they can be viewed as valuable assets moving forward if the team needed to make another move. Because I think a lot of the skill sets that the Cavs added with these players complement the stars really well, and they're going to be put in positions to succeed. And when you do that on a winning team and you do that in the playoffs, that raises your profile, that raises how you're viewed around the league, and that may make a blockbuster trade more feasible. Like, look at Jay Crowder. Like, he was viewed as an important piece in that trade. Like, that could happen with Ronnie Hood, or that could happen with Clarkson or Nance, and that might, paired with a pick or whatever it is down the road, that can help the front office reshape this team.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. In a lot of ways, all of a sudden, this team kind of looks like, and this kind of sounds like pejorative, but I don't want it to. It kind of looks like last year's Houston team, where you have one really, really great player, and then you have a lot of pretty good players on fairly manageable contract situations that can be flipped if need be.
Yeah.
I think their flexibility is really good here, and I'm very interested to see kind of what their organizational strategy is going to be, assuming they're able to keep LeBron with that pick. Like, do you go for someone like Jaren Jackson if it's in the 4-5 range? Jaren Jackson, who looks like a really safe pick. He shoots 45% from three. He blocks 8 shots per 100 possessions. like, he has a very obvious skill set that would help the Cavs, but, like, he might not be a superstar. Or do you just take a huge swing on a project? I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they want to do with that pick, because I think they know this is their last chance to find a Duncan to LeBron's Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a really important transition. I think that's something they're trying to sell him on with this core. I think that's why they're playing Jetty so many minutes. I mean, all of a sudden their rotation features a 22-year-old, Tristan's only 26 still. Nance and 25. Hood's 25. Yeah. Like, it's a bunch of 25-year-olds and 26-year-olds now, with George Hill. George Hill, JR, and, Green and LeBron are the only real old guys in the rotation if Korver is going to drop out.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that's kind of what they're trying to sell him on, is this youth. And I think it did show. All these guys they added are really good in transition. That one Jordan Clarkson transition layup was like, whoa, they haven't had something like that in a minute.
Yeah. Like, Rose could get to that speed, but then it's...
he was out of control.
Yeah, it's not going in.
I'm interested to see what looks like when the honeymoon period drops off. I think that's the next, like, big step, is, like, what happens when Clarkson... because Clarkson played very good defense in this game, for the most part. And we know that's not his reputation. Like, he mostly stuck on guys on ball, even if he's not going to be, like, a smart team defender. But he's huge. He's 6'5 at a point guard spot and fast. He's got the tools to be a good defender. Interested to see what happens as the veneer wears off. I joked after the game, Clarkson said that LeBron came up to him and was like, hey, there's no such thing as a mistake, bro. Just go play ball.
Yeah.
I'm like, 2 weeks from now, there's going to be such a thing as a mistake. So don't fucking make him, Jordan. Like, LeBron, if nothing else, demands a lot from his teammates. And I'm interested to see what happens when this team hits a stretch of adversity. But I do think that they make sense. And that is what really was missing more than anything, is that they didn't make any damn sense. And they do now. And I can't wait to see how they develop. And all of a sudden, we have guys who can get better, which hasn't really happened in a while.
Yeah, no kidding. And the other thing is, I feel like we're now actually going to be able to properly evaluate Tyronn Lue. Like, they just haven't... he hasn't had options. Like, I saw people complain earlier this season, well, why can't he just put out, like, five, like, a lineup with five good defensive players? Like, why doesn't he ever even attempt to do that? I'm like, are there five good defensive players on this team? Like, these pieces actually fit together, and we're going to see whether or not he can actually build a rotation. And I think we're going to be able to be a little more fair towards him.
Or why doesn't he just play LeBron with shooters? Well, because if he does that, then when all those guys get tired, he'll have to play four non-shooters.
Yep, they added shooting, they added defense, they added athleticism and excitement. Like, I haven't felt this way about the Cavs in a while, and it's just so refreshing to have young players. Like, that just hasn't been the case since LeBron's come back. It's just always been veterans. And I think that they found the right age range, too, with all these 25-year-olds, of guys that they've been in the league long enough, and they're not completely deer in headlights in this situation. And as you said, we'll see what happens when the honeymoon period wears off, but it sure is exciting now. And I think Jetty has earned the respect and trust of LeBron, which is good, because he wasn't someone that LeBron initially wanted on the team. He wanted Jamal Crawford on, and I think it's fair to say that would have been a mistake.
Would have been bad. Bad, bad, bad.
Like the Celtics on Sunday night, which, just so beautiful. I love beating that team. But
compelling and rich.
Well, we'll see what happens with this team moving forward. I'm excited. The Cavs have given us a reason to hope again, and there's kind of sky's the limit at this point moving forward. Obviously, they're not at...
More importantly than the sky's the limit, the floor isn't a pit of hell and misery.
Yeah, that's definitely nice. And, I mean, it's tough. Like, this team, I know a lot of people would argue that they weren't a contender with Kyrie Irving, and when you lose your second best player, that's not a blow that franchises can survive very well. And make no mistake, like, this team has been dysfunctional. The organization is dysfunctional. But I don't think whether this was the design plan from the beginning or not, which I think it's pretty clear that it wasn't, they fell backwards into a pretty good rebound from losing your second best player. And they're in a pretty good position moving forward. And I don't think that there's a lot of teams that could have done a better job in this situation.
I agree.
Well, we'll see what happens. I think that's a good spot to wrap it up. I'm excited. You're excited. Hopefully all our listeners are excited as well. Remember, the best way to support this podcast is by leaving a rating, review, and subscribing to the podcast. Unsubscribe, resubscribe. cook those books, cook the numbers, and we would appreciate that very much. So until next time, I'm Justin for Carter.
I'm Carter.
Oh man, I botched
that. Was weird. You've never done
living hell. Yeah, I botched the living hell.
That was weird. You shouldn't do that again.
I'm not going to do that again. As it was like leaving my mouth, I was like, holy hell, this is awful. I'm just,
what the hell's the matter with
me? I'm running on very, very little sleep. So you should all,
don't you dare cut.
We're not cutting. We don't cut anything out of this damn podcast. We're an open book. So thanks to the listeners, and until next time, go Cavs.